Jamanagni then ordered his youngest son Parashuram to kill his brothers, who had disobeyed his order, and his mother, who had mentally committed adultery. Lord Parashuram, knowing the power of his father, who was practiced in meditation and austerity, killed his mother and brothers immediately. So, it's quite a verse to wake up to in the morning of the, mother of Parashuram, Renuka, committing mental adultery. I mean, she didn't even do anything. She just went off to get water by herself by the river. And at that river, she saw the Chitrata. The king of the Gandharvas, or? Yeah, he, absolutely, a personification of beauty, obviously. And there he's engaged in his, exotic dalliances with these apsaras, absolutely divine-looking people. And so they're all there, and they're enjoying the pleasures of, as Gandharvas do. And Renuka just saw everything. She's living in an ashram with Jamadagni. It's probably a very simple life in the forest. And she sees this heavenly scene before her. And in that situation, her mind becomes attracted. Becomes attracted to that Gandharva of tremendous prowess. And so therefore, in this sense, she's been held responsible for mental adultery by Jamadagni. To us today, it's absolutely inconceivable. Generally, historic texts, whether it's the Bible, whether it's the Quran, or whatever, the adulterous woman's all stoned, thrown out, chased away. It's this infidelity. Infidelity. Somehow in ancient times, women were stoned for infidelity, but for men, especially Kshatriyas, infidelity was part of their prowess in a sense. Perhaps because a woman was part of the estate of the male in ancient times, that it was such. But in so many instances and throughout Mahabharata and all these Puranas that you've all studied and read, in cases where perhaps a Kshatriya such as Arjuna or anybody else is out traveling, it was considered that if they didn't address the needs or the interests of a woman in need, or a woman who was attracted to them, it was considered a slant on their prowess. It's quite inconceivable to us. It's certainly not our code of operation today in contemporary society, but in ancient times. This was, then they had a type of marriage, wasn't it? The Gandharva marriage, where, they fell in love that way and they married the woman. Sometimes they bring the woman home and add her to the growing collection of wives or whatever it was in those times. And at other times they would go to see her where she remained. This is how it was. And in that sense, the, infidelity was taken very seriously. Something very troubling. Even in the life of Ram, there was no question of infidelity of Sita. Just someone suggested it. And then the plight that took place in the rest of the Ramayana, again, we're just simple people. But it's really quite daunting considering the trials of Sita. And all that trial, even though there was no question of infidelity, just because of gossip, such action was taken where she was banished, and then she came back, and then and then she entered the earth. So obviously, it was something that even drama, in the case where just a rumor, it was something that was taken very, very seriously and is grappled with in these ancient shastras. Whenever is mentioned. Sometimes it's so difficult to grasp that reasons from previous lives or in different realms or whatever, they influenced what happened. It's almost like supernatural reasoning for things which are quite incomprehensible in life and which would go against the grain of morality of society, isn't it? Like Draupadi marrying five husbands. You know, how all that came about. There's so many reasons given. And if there are no apparent reasons, then reasons beyond life itself and beyond this one life are given so that we can reconcile these things within our minds and hearts and remain ourselves. What would you say, following our ethics and morality in life? So here, of course, these are all, I mean, this is divine people. Jamadagni is a great sage and rishi. Kshatriya. His mother was a Kshatriya. His father was a Brahmin. And the Brahmin, he had wanted to marry this lady, Satyavati, daughter of a Kshatriya. He's very attracted. And the king thought, oh, I'm marrying my daughter. Look at the prowess of our family. I'm going to marry my daughter to a Brahmin. What life will she have, isn't it? Perhaps if you're an extremely wealthy family and your daughter decided to marry one of the brahmacharis from our ashram, you'd be thinking, oh, Krishna, I've given you everything and you've chosen one of these renounced people who can't even afford a mortgage or whatever. How they'll get a job, whatever. So in this case, you know, he was concerned. My daughter's marrying. This Brahmin, he said, okay, you give a suitable dowry. You know, he asked for something like thousands of celestial horses, which was unimaginable. You know, it's like those rites of passage. You want to marry my daughter? Then, you know, really prove it. Prove it very seriously. Give an impossible task to the individual. They're sure to fail. But anyway, that rishi managed through his connection with the devatas to get gifted all those things that he could give in a dowry, and he gave the dowry, and therefore that marriage took place. But after the marriage took place, then Satyavati and her mother both wanted to have children. So the rishi did some special offerings for them to eat. And one offering would give birth to a brahmana, by nature, and one would give to the Kshatriya by nature. And so, anyway, somehow or other, often in these cases, these offerings were switched. And so the mother was to have the child of a Brahmin child, and Satyavati would have a Kshatriya. Not only that, and when the rishi found out, your mother took this, you took, oh, he said. Then he said to Satyavati, he said, my wife, your son will be such a ferocious Kshatriya that he'll just kill like 21 generations of Kshatriyas. And she said, God forbid. Please, I don't want a son like that. And he thought, then he said, okay, I'll push it. This is remarkable. This is how powers of these people, I'll push it to the next generation. Push it on, you know, give it to the son. Isn't it? Oh, you know, your son's going to be so like, okay, well, give it to his son. Fine, like that. So there was some adjustment there. And in that way, then Jamadagni was born. And Jamadagni then had that son of such prowess that he was destined to wipe out 21 generations of Kshatriyas. His name was just Rama. Because at that point, he never had that formidable axe as yet. That came later by benedictions. This is by Shiva. Shiva was in a situation of where he got into some complexity with another rishi, and that rishi, what was Agni, was it? Agni was Kartavira Arjun. Agni wanted to eat. He had nothing for him to eat. And Kartavira Jan said, I'll eat whatever you want. So he began to burn up and eat the forest. And there's one rishi there in the forest. Got really upset about that. Oh, he cursed Kartivirarjun. That's what it was. That because of you, all these Kshatriyas will be wiped out for 21 generations. That was related to that. Sorry, Kartivirarjun and that coming about. But there was another who, with regards to Lord Shiva, who had got into a complexity and hurled this massive axe which broke into many pieces or whatever before Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva was able to counter the thing. And therefore that rishi then bowed to Lord Shiva with great respect. But Shiva had that big chopper. And who to give it to? It came to Parushurama. It came to Rama. So the huge axe, Parashuram, his axe came from there. So this was his, he was fixed up now to do the job that was before him. In his life, you know, this Kartivirarjun came and stole you. In the last chapter, isn't it, you learn Kartivirarjun came and he took this Kamadhenu. He had Jamaragni had this cow, he was giving everything you could imagine. Kartivirarjun said, I need to steal this cow. I'll take it for myself. So he took the cow, and after having taken the cow, then it was like when Parashuram found out this had happened to his father, it said he became like like a trampled snake. Like if somebody stood on a snake, even if you come near to a snake. One day I was walking in Nepal in the mountains, like just the person in front of me just stepped across a very poisonous snake, and it was immediately ready to bite the nearest thing. So like a trampled snake then, Parashuram, he became absolutely furious. Furious. And he went and he chopped up Kartivirarjun. He came back then, his father was saying, you know, wow, that's severe. That's very severe. And a Brahmin should be forgiving, you know. The foremost quality of a Brahmin is forgiving. If you think of forgiving as such an important matter in terms of ending cycles of retribution. Retribution can go on for centuries amongst classes, amongst societies, amongst religions, amongst people. And forgiveness just can bring an end to that endless cycle of retribution. So Parashuram went off, isn't it? And then Samantapanchaka went to Kurukshetra. Oh no, that was when he dug those big lakes for all the blood of all those people he killed. That was related to that. But anyway, here, you know, he's come and his mother has just, in her mind, committed adultery or been infidelity. And he's asked immediately, you know, kill him, kill her. Vyabhicharini. Here in the verse here, Vyabhicharam munir yatva. The muni knew this wife, her mind's been distracted. By this devata. Is one verse, Chanakya states, Rina karta pita shatru. Mata cha vyabhicharini. Bhaya Rupavati Shatru Putra Shatru Apandita. Saying that, you know, Rina Karta Pita Shatru, Prabhupada quotes this verse, that the father who puts everyone into debt is the enemy of the family. Rina Karta Pita Shatru. Shatru is the enemy of the family. A father who puts everything into debt. Then Mata Cha Vyabhicharini, a mother who is unchaste, a mother who has, an adulteress is an enemy to the family also. Bharya Rupavati Shatru, maybe a little bit more difficult to understand. Bharya Rupavati Shatru, that a beautiful wife is also an enemy. And finally, the son, Putra Shatru Apandita. And the son's an enemy who's just a fool. And you have a fool for a son. So a father who gets a family into debt is an enemy. Mata cha vyabhichari, the mother who is unchaste is an enemy to the family. The wife who is absolutely beautiful and adorable is an enemy. And the son who's a fool So, anyway, I won't give an explanation of that verse. But this was considered, you know, obviously, we should be socially responsible. Yes? We should be socially responsible. We should be responsible fathers, responsible mothers. We should, you know, anyway, a beautiful woman could be an enemy. Maybe you become overly deluded. Maybe it's also maybe a very handsome man if you were to take it the other way. Or else maybe if you have a very, you'll be always protecting her all the time because every other chhatri in those days were all stealing things from each other. So women being part of the estate then, such beautiful. You see, actually, here's a thought. You know, and even in Africa, the ladies would, what would they do to their skin, wasn't it? They put things through their lips. Yeah? And through their ears. And they literally, cut themselves in their faces and everything. Your face is like. And the purpose, why they did all those things, all became cultural, traditional in time. But it's because other tribes would steal the women. Isn't it? Like, even now, you know, in the Middle East, with all these radical entities, they go along, they kill the men, they steal the women, and they sell them off. They marry them off. So the women would literally, you know, give themselves, they put, what would you say, unattractive features on their bodies to make themselves unattractive to, you know, males on the rampage. So though beauty is an opulence, beauty can be a curse. Beauty can be a curse. So in that sense, you know, the warnings there, be careful. And a son who's a fool. They say that, what is it, the two, Chanakya also says, the great, two greatest pains in the world. One is to be a fool yourself, and another is to have an undisciplined son. It'll drive you mad in your life. Anyways, the verse by Chanakya. This is the Vyabhicharam, means that somebody you're, if you commit in a relationship of trust to a person, such trust and intimacy, and they breach that trust, you know, it's not a good thing. That breaks hearts, it breaks families, it breaks down society. So here, obviously, the matter of infidelity is the matter here. I won't focus on the consequence that came from this because that's just unimaginable by me in any matter of regard. So, Parashuram, Prabhupada gives some relief in the purport where he says Parashuram was confident in this regard and therefore he agreed to kill his mothers and brothers. He was confident in the regard that his father would give him a benediction and he would bring everyone back to life. So in a sense, there's some point about etiquette with elders in here as well. You know, we have a culture of respect. Respect for elders and by the elders being gracious to those who are younger. It's a culture of respect. Sometimes the elders tell you things or tell you to do things. Doesn't add up. There's a young man, I remember showing my father, after I'd lived in India for years, I came back and I showed him, I was showing him a slideshow of all the services I was doing and my responsibilities. And he was mesmerized. He was very, very impressed, very impressed. And he said to me later, he said, George, I'm very impressed by what you've accomplished in your life. But couldn't you have done it as a Catholic? Couldn't you have done it as a Catholic? I said, okay, Dan, there's no point. No point in even going there, isn't there? So, I couldn't follow his instructions, isn't it? Sometimes. I mean, we should be pleasing to our elders, pleasing to our parents. It's not like we should just be, you know nothing, isn't it? Get out of my life. You don't know anything. You know, your history. I want to get on with my own life. That's not very good. Yeah, we have to take into serious consideration. I remember one senior devotee was giving class, and they said, the solution is don't listen to your parents. And I was in the reception. And I thought, I'll die for my daughter, will you? This was my immediate reaction. I thought, in a moment, if someone has to die, it'll be me. Do you care that much? Then be very careful. This is my, as a father. Yeah, I'm deluded, whatever. Anyway, as a father, I thought, I'll die for my daughter in one moment. Don't listen to your parents. No, we have to. All the Vedic culture, isn't it? Your parents are God, you know, isn't it? The guest is God, the teacher is God. That's like this is the culture of respect. This was the culture of respect in these days. Parashuram's father told him to do something, he obeyed the order. He obeyed it very seriously. But he obeyed it in such a way he got his own way. Isn't it? He obeyed it. His elder was pleased and he got his own way anyway. Because Prabhupada said he was confident. Parashuram was confident in this regard. That if he followed his father's instructions, his father was prabhava gya. Prabhava. Bhava means your, like, emotion. Subhav, your nature. Your nature. Prabhav means supernature. His supernatural power. Beyond just the natural, his supernatural strength and power. The Parashuram knew this about his father. His father gave him this instruction. Hare Krishna. It was such a severe instruction. The other brother, the other son, I would have been with the other sons. I would have been like, oh, forget it. I should have left you when I was 16. but they all said, no way, no way. And the father said to him, hey, kill him also. Huh? I was in a meeting the other day, a very serious meeting, you know. And in serious meetings, when decisions have to be made, you know, nobody likes abstainers. And you have to make a really serious decision. Put your hands up. You all put your hands up. And it's almost there, and then there's people. Why did you abstain? Why? No, I don't know. I missed that. I wasn't listening properly. I don't know. I don't know the history of this thing. I can't. So you can be an abstention in these meetings, isn't it? So in this meeting, they said the chairman said, "Please, if possible, no abstentions. You know, you have to be part of the decision." Isn't it? Abstaining can be, oh, I don't want to be part of that decision. That's too heavy. So anyway, he said, no, best no abstentions. And I said, no, and after the Prophet Muhammad had died, there was the first group that came together, the Khalifa. When they came together, they had to make some serious decisions about the future of the Muslim community, the Islamic community. So they did it in a democratic way. Who was going to be the successor to Muhammad? This is where all the problems happen for religious organizations. Who will succeed Prabhupada? Who will succeed Muhammad? Who will be the successor of Bharat? Succession's always a problem. Here they decide, we have to sort out the succession. So they made one rule. Everyone must take a vote. And if you abstain, you'll be killed. Finished. Any abstentions, you'll be killed. So you have to vote. There's someone there at the door with a sword. He'll cut your head if you don't vote. So anyway, they made their decisions. And of course, then there was a split after that, isn't it? And from that time, you had the one side, the Ritviks, and then you had the others, even in Islam. It's always happening in successions of saintly people. So Parashuram, with such, you know, he killed his brothers. And he killed his mother. I mean, just to read the words is a simple thing, but if you think beyond just the words, it's just like, what? You imagine somebody with an axe, just, okay. And then, okay, all right. Now, wow. You know, it said that the Jamadagni came to his senses. He lost his senses, thank God. It said, you know, when he came to his sense, this is the thing of anger. Isn't it? Kama krodh. Kamesha krodhesha. Raja gunasamud. Once the kama, once the desirefulness comes, once the anger comes, you have no hope for yourself. Jai Sisi Radha Gopalananda. Absolutely no hope for oneself. That moment. Therefore, you know, Srimad Bhagavad Gita is the most of it. Dhyayato vishayapungsam, sangaste supajayati, sangat sanjayati, kama, kama krodha vijayati, krodha bhavati sammohat, sammohat smiti vibramat, smiti brahmsad buddhinasho, panashati. You're done for. The done for starts, has a starting point. Dhyayato. The thing which one chooses to meditate on. There's a situation, even I was reading a book recently, The 7-Day Mental Diet. And in there, making a very strong point, you have to be selective of your thoughts and focus on the thoughts which are beneficial for you. Because there's so much up there. Only 10% is our conscious mind. There's 90% of it is full of stuff. There's so much in there. And so, dhyayato, just that point, wasn't it? Ajmal just looked, it was the glance, it's where it all started. The glance is where it all started. Just that point of what I see, then what I choose to, then comes Sangaste supajayati, sangat, attachment, comes from there. I remember when I was a brahmachari in Vrindavan, the first time I saw my wife, I didn't know she would be my wife at that time. I was just walking up the stairs and I just turned around and looked at this lady. And I thought, Krishna. And then I went to the temple president. I said, you know, Prabhupada said there should be no single woman living in Vrindavan. They're gathering here. This is the Brahmachari Ashram request of the president. They're gathering here in Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, no single woman in the Vrindavan temple. Just from there. Just one glance. Anyway, as they say, the rest is history. This is a stern warning, especially for the monastics in our ashrams. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took such issue with Chota Haridas. Yeah? He took such issue with Chota Haridas. Prakriti Darshana. He just looked, either Prakriti Darshana or Prakriti Sambhashana. He just looked. He just maybe spoke inappropriately. And Mahaprabhu, just from eating the food cooked for him that had been begged by this Chota Haridas from Madhavi Devi, he said, something wrong here. He asked, where did this rice came from? He said, Chota Haridas brought it from Madhavi Devi. I never want to see him again. This was this behavior was in opposition to everything else about Mahaprabhu. I don't want to see him again. Finished. You know the katha, the leela. I mean, sort of Damodar petitioned him. All the devotees petitioned Mahaprabhu. Everyone came forward. Mahaprabhu said, what was it? Prabhu kohi bairagi kori dekati Prakriti Sambhashana. Mahaprabhu said that I don't want to see Dekati na. You're going too fast there for me. Dekati na paron. Ami tahara badan. Dekati na paron. I don't want to see the face. The tahara badan. Of the renunciate. Huh? Prakriti Sambhashana, who's speaking in this way, inappropriately. I don't want to see the face of such an renunciate. Bhaktisiddhanta speaks in the purports to those verses. The quality of a Vaishnava is shalata, simplicity. Simplicity of heart, not kapat. Kapat means that their posing is one thing, but inside something else. Preoccupied internally. People used to say to me, when is the time for, when should I know whether I should change ashram? You know, what point, you know? Because at times when you're a monastic or you're a brahmachari or whatever, at times your mind becomes a little pagal. A little, isn't it? I remember being a brahmachari in Bhaktivedanta Manor. Maybe one young lady caught your eye for some time. And then she lived in the ashram. And then she married. And you go, okay, that's one less thing to think about. It's, you know, the real stories that happen inside here, you know. There's the biographies that we all write and tell, but there's real stories that happen inside all of us. Like that. The, you know, so I would say, you know, obviously thoughts come and go in our minds and hearts. This is completely natural. It is not unnatural. It is 100% natural that these interests come and go. And sometimes, you know, in the brahmacharya, we used to say there's like a brahmacharya ashram. Sometimes it comes like a big wave, isn't it? Isn't it? This one's bigger than the one before. Just wait, it's going to, isn't it? You'll say, senior brahmacharya, people say, oh, you're going to pass, don't worry. Just hold on, you know, just hang on. You'll be fine. Prabhu, I'm holding. Oh, it's going. And then again, you wonder where all that came from. Where did all that come from? Isn't it? And you think, oh, so many guests were at the temple today. Must have been the karma, you know, coming in over to me from there. And then, you know, after some time, peacefully, everything's going great. You can never imagine anything. Another wave starts to swell in that ocean, isn't it? So it's like this. You know, you have to live with vegam, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam. Tolerating doesn't mean there's nothing there. It means that you're not giving way to what's there. It's coming and it's going. It's coming and going like that. But if it reaches the point of preoccupation, which means you become kapat, Savindriyani manasa, ya aste manasa smaran, endriyatam vimudatva, mithya achara. So when you're achara, your conduct becomes mithya. Mithya, false. Huh? When it becomes false, then that's not good. It's not good at all. And when it becomes false is when Savindriyani manasa, ya aste manasa, though I've renounced everything, I'm a great brahmacharini, I only have a few saris, boot bag, do a little service every day. I don't know why my service happens to be cleaning every day, but anyway, you know, like that, I, you know, it's all good, it's all simple, it's all clean, similarly like a brahmachari. But if that, Prabhupada mentioned, markata vairagya, where that external renunciation is sustained or maintained, but inside the heart's yearning for companionship, the heart's yearning for love, the heart's yearning for relationship, there's a preoccupation with all of that stuff going on consistently. It forms a consistent character. It's no longer a wave. It's a consistent theme. Then I think that's probably a pretty good point to think, maybe I need to do something about this. So, preoccupation. Because dhyayato, where the mind is, isn't it? That's where we're going, in this life and the next. So anyway, you know, the example of Chota Haridas was so severe, isn't it? It said that the devotees, the sadhus, they weren't even thinking of any illicit thoughts in their sleep. So Mahaprabhu taught a very, very strong Bairagi Shikshana. It said one of the things learned from this instructive pastime of Chota Haridas. Bairagi Shikshana. This is for all people who are renunciates. Monastics, brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, sannyasis. Don't prakriti sambhashana. Again, Bhaktisiddhanta writes that this mingling of men and women, where materialistic things are being discussed, they says, no, cut it out. Cut it out. They're from the temple ashrams, and all of us in temple service, we all have to be respectful to each other. We all have to treat each other with such dignity and respect. But if you're a brahmachari or brahmacharini, you know, I know it's like, oh, everybody thinks I'm a raving fanatic or whatever. I have to be talking. I have to be like that. You know, better err on the side of caution. Better err on the side of caution for brahmacharinis and brahmacharis. Prabhupada said, isn't it? Everybody knows it. What did he said the relationship should be like? Pass the salt, was it? You know, Prabhuji, can you pass the salt, please? Me? Sorry, me? What was that? Salt? What's that again? Oh, yeah, salt. Yeah, whatever. Like that. Pass this here. They're respectful relationships. Respectful relationships. With enough distance between that the respect is retained. This is the wall between us. One psychologist was writing about this. Two prisoners in opposite cells. They were there for life. They began to communicate with each other by tapping on the wall. The thing between them facilitated their conversation. So like brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, and ashrams, it's the wall between you that facilitates the appropriate level of dealings. That the brahmacharinis can fulfill their purposes here of service, study, surrender, and ultimate spiritual experience. The brahmachari, you're free. You're free from all this stuff. So you can study, serve, surrender, and just be happy in bhakti. Brahmacharis and brahmacharis, you've chosen this life for that. But it's the wall between you of respect. Isn't it? Also, Chanakya would say that isn't it? Matrivat paradhareshu. That matrivat paradhareshu. Another person's wife, you'd see his mother. Meaning that the very feelings of respect, adoration, you would never exploit your mother. No question. Matrivat paradhareshu. So that non-exploitative self, you can't feel it for your mother. Really. That's how the brahmacharis, brahmacharinis relate. Or even in dealings with somebody else's wife. The basis is respect. The basis is respect. So, there in the whole Chota Haridas episode, this point was made very strongly. Infidelity of mind is, you know, it's even in ashrams, you want to be free of it as much as possible. Let the waves come, let the waves go, but not good. Here again, drastic action, severe response. You know, we don't imitate any of this stuff. The Parashuram is a Shaktyavesha avatar. He knew what would come and how everything would reappear, and his mother would live and his brothers would live. But, you know, for us here, it's just that, you know, these allowing our mind to wander is just the beginning of our troubles, isn't it? That's just where it starts to go. Right there, we have to be careful. Vegam. Manage the urge for these things. So, anyway, this is, if there's a lesson in all this for us, it's not to go out with an axe and it may be chop people up. That's not appropriate. But I think that we can learn a couple of things here. One is that we should be very careful with regards to the consequence of not being selective of the thoughts that we have and focusing on the ones which are beneficial. And that has to be our daily bread. Second thing is there's something about dealing with elders in here. You know, even if you're complete disagreement with your elder, even in Krishna consciousness, maybe you're right. I've say people ask me for advice. You know, well, at least if you ask me for advice, I'm only saying just consider it. And then you have to make your own decision. You consider it. At least if you're going to ask me, respect it that much. That at least it was a consideration for you. It was something that contributed to your weighing up of the choices or the decisions you need to make. And then, certainly any elder will support the decisions of their someone who's junior. So in that way, you know, there's always retaining respect. We're not brash with the elders. You have to be careful, isn't it? Once when I was living in Vrindavan, it was the political time in Vrindavan, and the loudspeakers in the street were just blasting right in the Gurukul windows. All day, every day. We were trying to memorize, the boys were trying to memorize the Gita. It was just, you know, time to sleep. It was still going on. People just standing there with one of those horn things shouting, oh, the political stuff. We were driven mad by it. Sort of, you may remember this street noises. But anyway, one day in a fury, I went out there. My Scottish Parishram mood, you know. I went out and I said, you know, I mean, how are we going to stop all this stuff? To one of the shopkeepers there. He said, don't, Gauri, don't. He said, let me speak to my father. His father's name was Guruji. He was an old crabbit fellow. He said to him, Father, you tell these people to turn that down. The people in the school, the kids can't sleep. And he got up and started yelling his head off. Now, I did that as a young man. You know, gosh knows what the consequences might have been. But for elders, you know, they say so many things. No, I agree. Just give me your blessings, huh? And then, obviously, the wisdom we take as well, isn't it, in our life? It's important. Once I was sitting in a GVC meeting, and there was a whole discussion about performance. I'll finish on this point. It's time for breakfast. There's a whole discussion about performance going on. When people get into positions and it's gone, then are they performance evaluated or are they just in that position for life? Because it's a movement. It has to move forward. So some people are saying, no, some people should be removed from position. You know, it's just like if it's not working out, this thing should happen, they should be removed, somebody else should take the chance. So the discussion was going on. Everybody was contributing. Then one of my senior friends from India came over. It was Deviki Nandan Prabhu from Mumbai, Juhu. He stood behind me and said, Gauri, he said, you know, when it comes to these things, he says the Americans want to kick people out. He said, you British want to move them on diplomatically. And he said, we Indians, we keep our elders here and we just work around them. We just walk around them, move on, isn't it? So, with elders, you know, we can learn that from here. With elders, within the temple, your next in line, your line manager, or your shiksha, or your mentor, you have to give a serious respect. Don't try to upset them. And they'll say many things, and you listen, weigh it up, and make your decision. The second thing we can certainly learn from here. So with regards to our thoughts and how we behave with, and that we should always be hopeful of the right things and that everybody will be okay as Parashram brought everyone back to life again. That we can learn this from here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.